Hey everybody, welcome to the Linux Cast. I'm your host, Matthew Weber. I'm joined by Martin Burke. How you doing, Martin?
Hiya, Matt. Yeah, I'm well, thank you. How are things for you?
Well, we're going to talk about it when we get to the what have we been up to this week, but I've been having a Linux week. It's not been good. Other than that, it's
paying the Linux tax, are you?
Yeah. Well, actually, what I'm paying is the ADD tax, because really I did not. All right, so let's just jump into it. So I'll go. Normally, I let you go first when we talk about what we've been doing in Linux, but just let me get this off my chest. I'm in a ranting mood, so you're just gonna have to deal with me. So I've been using Arch Linux for like the last 6 months. It's my longest stay on a distro ever. I mean, it was. I actually had to go through and upgrade the kernel, because I actually sat through a kernel until it was end of life. I'd never done that before. Usually I hop every 2 or 3 months. And I was having some compositor problems, and I was like, well, you know what? Maybe if I switch to a different distro, I'll get rid of the compositor problems. So I did. I started off with Arch Labs. That did not work. And then I said, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to go back to Arco. I got that installed, but I couldn't get it to boot into the boot manager. Or not the boot manager, but the display manager. And then you can tell I'm desperate, because I installed Ubuntu. It only would have been worse if I had installed Mint, you know? I was on there for about 4 hours before I had serious AUR withdrawals, because snaps are not good. I mean, I don't know if you know this, Martin, but when you open up a snap, it takes like 30 seconds for it to load. The loading time is so bad.
Yeah, it's all decompressing it, and it's essentially unzipping it, I think.
Yeah.
In the background.
It's like, come on, man. Like, I can understand them being a little slower, but I mean, that's just downright ridiculous. I mean, I thought, you know, maybe I'll try Flatpak the next time, but I just couldn't.
Mm.
I couldn't, you know, whatever. I just, you know, like, I'm just going to try Manjaro. I did end up getting Manjaro installed. That's what I'm using now. And I've had some experiences with Manjaro in the past. I just expect this to fail eventually after an update. Every time I install Manjaro after an update, it always fails. So I'm expecting within the next 2 or 3 days for this install to just completely not restart or something after an update. Add on top of that, because I mean, you remember when I first got this microphone set up, I spent like, what, 2 or 3 weeks trying to get it to work. And I finally got it to work, and everything was, you know, like, it was working and it was good, and I shouldn't have touched it because I'm a dumbass. And I had to go through and distro hop, so now I'm back in audio hell again. Audio on Linux is just not good. it's so bad. I mean, it's been 30 years. Alright, so I first used Linux in 2000, probably 2001. It was OpenSUSE. On like a CDRW. And audio was bad then. It is now 20 years later, and it's still bad. Alright. That's enough of my rant. So what about you? What have you done this week in Linux?
I'll be delving into further customization on my KDE desktop by installing the Latte dock and various other widgets and icon sets. Obviously, I got the desktop looking terrible, and it just broke during my journey down that rabbit hole. So, yeah, that was my story, really. I had fun, though. That was the main thing.
When I first started using KDE, I broke it a lot, too. It's one of those things where you just kind of have to break it in order to put it back together, I think.
I think, to be fair, it's because I was on the KDE Plasma distro, which is quite high in the rankings, but I think KDE even say, well, it's not really good enough for a daily driver. So I just went back onto Fern OS, which is fine. Nice and easy set up, really. Audio is working perfectly, as you can hear.
Yeah, brag that up. Yeah, yeah, all right. Yeah. I hate you right now. It's horrible, man. Come on, don't rub that in. All right. All right, so if you want to get in contact with us, you can do so on Twitter at the Linux Cast. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at MTWB. Martin's Martin Twit to you. You can subscribe to all of our stuff at thelinuxcast.org. You can contact us via email at thelinuxcast@gmail.com or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/linuxcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube, where you'll see FOSS and Linux-related videos coming out every single day of the week, because I'm an insane person and decided to find a new hobby. It's going well. And some of the videos are horrible and some of them are less horrible, but they're pretty good. Anyways, make sure you do all that stuff. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/thelinuxcast. So each and every week, each of us come up with a one link each for like newsish kind of stuff. So Martin, what link did you find for us this week?
Yeah, it was Mozilla, love them or hate them recently. So they set up their VPN. Well, they haven't set it up. They set it back up in July. The VPN service made it available for Android, iOS, and Windows. And now they've released it to Linux and macOS users. They reckon it's low price. I don't know about your VPN prices on there, but I've got $5 a month. Does that sit about well, about right?
I think I saw one for $40 a year here not too long ago.
I think I pay about £32 a year with private internet access, which I do quite rate. So product details, blah, blah, blah. Connect 5 devices with 1 subscription. Well, that should just be a given, to be fair, if not more. So 280 plus servers, 30 countries and 40 plus cities. I don't know whether you cap your VPNs over there, but I've got no bandwidth restrictions. Interestingly enough, no logging of your network activity. Fours, easy to use, can be quite fast, obviously, depending where you live, if you're in cities, and trusted Mozilla name. So put a question mark by that, but there you go.
Right.
A couple of against I've got is it. I don't know this for certain already on the internet. Doesn't unblock US Netflix, Amazon Prime Video or Disney Plus. It's got few features, barely any customized configuration options. Encryption and IP address obfuscation. Mozilla VPN uses WireGuard even, and zero network activity is logged to servers. So if speed and security are priorities to you, the $5 a month may be reasonable. So
my biggest problem with it is that it's not through Mozilla. It's actually they're just rebranding someone else's stuff, right?
So yeah, basically, yeah.
It bothers me a bit, because I mean, not only do you have to trust Mozilla, which is, you know, iffy these days, but you also have to trust this small vet company or whatever to, I mean, they say they don't log any network activity, but I mean, how do you really know? I mean,
well, let's wait till someone's rather naughty and they get subpoenaed for the information. We'll see exactly. I mean, I'm guessing the company's based in some random country like that, but I'm guessing if they're operating services on US soil and things like that. We can only see, I mean, different places, I don't want to name any, have said they don't log it and things like that, and they've soon coughed up information to the authorities. But we'll see. It's one of those suck it and see then. But if you're up to dodgy things, basically, Mozilla's the way to go till we see exactly how to the word they are. How about yourself? What news caught your eye this week?
All right, so I've never actually used Tails before, but basically what Tails is, for anybody who doesn't know, is that it's a Linux distribution that lives on a USB stick and is completely focused on security. It's kind of like the Tor browser version of Linux. It's completely, it doesn't remember any of your safe states. It's all containerized and stuff. It's very interesting, but this week it came out that they're looking to migrate their entire stack over to Wayland instead of Xorg to improve app security. And I just thought that it was interesting because I think more and more this year we're going to see Wayland kind of come to the front. Now, I know DistroTube did a video today where he was poo-pooing Wayland. But I know like Steam has gone through and done a whole bunch of work to get Wayland Gaming working, and I know that Nvidia just signed on to make Nvidia graphics drivers work better with Wayland, and I know that the AMD open source drivers work fairly well with Wayland. So I mean, we're seeing this kind of, I mean, it's taken 10 years, but finally we're getting some momentum into the point where Wayland seems to be kind of finally coming to the point where maybe we might be seeing it in some more mainstream distributions. Like, it'd be interesting to see if we see something. I mean, I complain about Linux Mint being not unique enough from Ubuntu. It'd be very interesting to see them say, hey, you want to know what? We're going to make Wayland default. And then all of a sudden, Linux Mint has a reason to not focus on the Debian edition, you know? I know Debian itself has been focusing a lot on Wayland as well, so it'd be interesting to see how that goes on, down as well. I want to try Tails because I think Tails would be kind of interesting to. I mean, literally, it's just a Linux distribution you carry around in your pocket. You say you go to the library and you don't want to use their random Windows. Windows, probably Windows 98 computer or something that's at the library. You just pop this in and you have your a full Linux distribution. It's completely containerized, so that's really interesting. Granted, I doubt.
And
Wait,
you,
say that again.
oh, sorry, carry on. I was going to say, and you save the £5 for the VPN off of Mozilla if you're just using this,
Very
essentially.
true. Yeah, you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. It's I don't know. It's just it looks very fascinating. I'm gonna give it a try. I obviously in these days and age. That scenario is a little, not realistic because I mean nobody goes anywhere anymore. But I mean, eventually maybe we'll be able to go out to the library and do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, it's nice as well if you literally, some people obviously just stick to the one browser and things like that. But it may well be a case that yeah, you don't want to see these adverts popping up. I mean, I like to think everyone's got their ad blockers and everything like that, or use Brave for whatever. But yeah, at the end of the day, if you just want to look at go shopping and do the odd thing online without just looking over your shoulder, whether it's obviously for the correct reasons. I mean, everyone's got that right, really. But yeah, it does look good. I must admit, I've never used it really. Tails. I've used something similar. Obviously, if you do go on the Tor network, I think it is. Obviously, your internet is a lot slower because you're hopping. You're basically bridges and hopping from internet to internet. So I mean, don't expect to sit around watching YouTube videos, really. But yeah, it's like you say, it's ideal. Just pop it in your pocket, and if you're on other PCs, it's not your own. You know, it's secure and it's volatile as soon as you pull it out or leave it behind.
It's just one of those things. I know there's other alternatives out there. Something like I think there's something called like Cubes OS or something that's kind of similar to this. I know I listened to a podcast about that before. Anyway, so let's move on to the main topic. So the main topic this week is something that we've covered before. I think back when Ricky and I were doing the podcast, but I just thought we'd kind of redo it and talk about it a little bit. GTK versus Qt now. Recently, GTK 4.0 was, I believe it was either finalized or went into beta or something. So we're looking at a kind of a reemergence of the GTK versus QT because Qt 6 is also going to be coming up in the next year or so. So when you're installing a desktop environment, you a lot of times really what you're choosing between is GTK and Qt. So Martin, you're a big KDE guy. And I've always been a big KDE guy, so I was wondering if there's a reason why you and I seem to kind of go towards the design language of Qt instead of something like GTK, which is what GNOME and Budgie and all those different desktop environments rely on. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's simple, really, in my mind. So, I mean, you've just got to name a couple of the desktops. So KDE, Plasma, Deepin, Ubuntu, Kylin, use GTK. Use Qt. Obviously, KDE does use, I think, a bit of GTK also. Or I've got that totally the wrong way. No, that's right, isn't it? Yeah, Qt, yeah. KDE Plasma.
Yeah, there's some GTK stuff in there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, KDE uses a bit of both, obviously. Just straight out of the box, it just looks fine. I mean, as you know, you can theme stuff to all you want. I mean, Kvantum as well, you can use Qt to get it themed and stuff like that. And I'm sure you could do it with GTK, but I mean, GTK, I mean, some of the desktop environments use that. So we've got like Budgie, Cinnamon, Mate, XFCE, Pantheon doesn't look too bad. But then again, they're still quite heavily themed anyway, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm quite happy with Qt. I mean, there was talk of memory, one's more memory, one's less memory, but I'd like to think they're probably ironing all the creases out there as we advance on through.
So my takeaway is kind of similar in that Qt seems to be much easier to theme. Maybe that's just more of a KDE thing, that they've just kind of built that into their desktop environment. But it seems that because of the way the Qt framework is built or whatever, KDE's been allowed to go through and build in theming, which is something that GNOME and all these other things kind of have to hack on to the top of the framework in order to get it to work. So, I mean, like if you're using GNOME, I mean, we talked about this, I think it was even last week where we're talking about theming. If you use GNOME, the theming is kind of like set on top of it, and it's kind of really hacky, and GNOME has gone through and said, you know, it's not that great and we're going to tear it out and all this stuff. Whereas the Qt guys have and KDE specifically have kind of built it in stuff. So really it's kind of really all about theming, but if you look at it from like a developer standpoint, you gotta remember, I'm not a developer or a designer, a minuscule little bit, like negative. If there was a positive, if it was possible to be an anti-developer, that would be me. But from everything that I've read, GTK seems to be easier to code for, mostly because the framework is more, I guess I'm going to say simple. Like there's the tools that they use to design their apps and to deal with outputting, the appearance of their apps seem to be more refined and simplistic than what you find on the Qt end. Whether or not that's true, like I said, I don't know. I have any experience with those things. It's just things that I've read on the internet, so of course it's going to be true.
Of course.
Yeah, right? Really, because when I use a desktop environment, I always preferred the KDE that uses Qt, mostly because of the theming things. But I've also noticed that a lot of the times KDE and the Qt stuff is faster and uses less resources than GTK. And now I know a lot of people say it's the other way around. And I also know that a lot of people say that it's GNOME that gives GTK a bad name, because there's a lot of GTK desktop environments out there. Mate uses it and it's fast. The Pantheon uses it and it's fast, and Cinnamon uses it and it's fast. So maybe it's just GNOME that gives it a bad name, but every time I use it, it seems like it's just a little bit slower than what I experience on the KDE side. Whether or not that is quantifiable and you can go say, you know, this uses 200 megs of RAMs less or whatever, I don't know about all that. It's just feel wise, it feels that the cute stuff is quicker.
Yeah, well, I mean, Qt with the desktop environments like UK UI, LXQt, I mean, that's one of the lightest ones you can get, I think, if you're not going to go for stuff like OpenBox and things like that. LXQt is definitely what I put on my old laptop from like 2009 to get that up and running. I mean, I didn't put anything much heavier on it, but like I say, I mean, Qt is supposed to have the least memory, but I think as we go down the line and the years, the amount of processing speed that we're getting, I don't think it's probably going to be marginal. Now, with the RAN comparisons, I mean, obviously, things like that, we've all pulled up an app that we'd got used to on a different distro, on whether it's GTK or Qt, and I opened it up and just thought, oh my God, that looks absolutely horrible. It's usually Qt. I'll pull something else up, and I thought, oh my God, what's going on here? Before I even knew about all the theming and different things like that, it's a case of, well, that didn't look like that before. Is it an old version? But obviously it was GTK or Qt, whichever, and I just didn't have it set up. But again, I mean, it all depends how you want your system. It's infinite, isn't it, what you can do with theming and stuff like that.
Well, and it's not as if you're on GNOME, you can't install a Qt program or the other way around. So,
yeah.
That's the good thing about Linux, is that even though they use competing, you know, frameworks or whatever, you can still install a GTK app on KDE, and it works just fine because KDE has gone through and done the work to make that stuff kind of look, you know,
fairly good. Yeah, they've beautified it up, haven't they?
Yeah. And that's gotten way better in the last few years, because it didn't used to be the case. I mean, you could still use them. They didn't have all the features that you would experience if you used a GTK app on a GTK supported desktop environment. So, we don't have to really get into this, but it always just seems to me, and this is just me beating on GNOME again, but it always seems like if you want to go to a forward leaning, desktop environment, it's always going to be KDE, because they're always developing stuff, they're always coming through and, you know, refining things and making things better. GNOME just seems to stay the same. I mean, I guess if you want stability, but I mean, that may not even be true anymore, because the GNOME 40 looks like it's finally going to get a design refresh, which is good. So I don't know, maybe we're coming to a point where the Linux desktop is going to be exciting again. Or, you know, you could just use a window manager like I do. All right, let's jump into the apps of the week. Martin, you have an app of the week for us.
Yeah, so I've got Quite RSS. So it's written in C++ and Qt. It's a great little RSS feed reader. It's clean, with an easier to use interface, with all the usual features, including tags, ad block, share button if you want to send it to Twitter, Reddit, or Facebook if that's your jam, if you people bother with Facebook nowadays. But yes, really good. It's just, I mean, it's been a while since I've had an RSS feeder, and forgot how actual good they are, just condensing your news down into literally a readable format, instead of just like opening up a folder with your various news, or open up your tabs, or just flick through them. But yeah, it's really nice little RSS feed reader with all the main features that you need, and it's quite recommended. How about yourself? What you got on us for us this week?
All right, so as everybody knows, Mozilla came out and pretty much pissed off everybody by saying they wanted to determine truth on the internet or whatever. I mean, I did a video on it. I think every Linux YouTuber did a video on it. So I've been looking for something to switch to. I'm still using Firefox as my main one, because it's like the only alternative unless you want to use Chrome. I looked at Brave. I haven't been impressed with Brave. It'd probably be the one that I'll end up switching to. But if you're into keyboard-centric navigation, Qt Browser probably is the one that you might want to go with, especially if you don't do syncing between your phone and your desktop. I happen to do those things, so Qt Browsers might not be the one that I switch to. But I use it. I've been using it quite a bit. And basically, what this is it's just a frame, with a web page in it. And you do all of your navigation with your keyboard, the Vim keys and key bindings and stuff like that. You're not supposed to use your mouse at all. I mean, you can use your mouse, but it's meant to be done completely with the keyboard. It's of the browsers that work like this. So there's a few of them. There's like Surf, and there's the Min browser, and there's the I think there's one called the Vi browser or Vim browser or something. Those are all fairly slow. Qt browser. It's not as fast as Firefox or Chrome, but it's not something where you'll sit like 5 minutes later, YouTube still has not loaded. No, this was really fairly snappy. It loads faster than Snaps. I'm just saying. Yeah, Qt browser is mine, and it's still being developed. Like unlike some of the other ones that I just listed. Yeah, that is mine. That was a really short episode, but it was really good. I think most people, Martin, really don't care about GTK versus Qt, but it's kind of like a nerdy little topic that we just talked about.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to, should we pad it out a bit? Just talk about browsers or Brave might as well, huh?
Oh, we can. Do
And
you is that what you use as Brave, or do you, what browser do you use? I'm just curious.
well, to be fair, I was going to give you kudos on not giving us a command line app this week,
Oh,
but Qt Browser, it seems an absolute nightmare.
yeah.
It's going through your feed or your YouTube subscriptions with your keyboard shortcuts clicking on it. To me, it seems a night. It almost it seems as torture.
Well, see, I go through on every browser that I do and install something called Vim keys, and it allows me to navigate my browser with a keyboard. So I do that anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm just used to it. I think it comes down to the using of a window manager. Once you switch to a window manager, you're kind of prodded into using your keyboard to navigate everywhere.
And you've got them
And
all in your memory and everything, haven't
yeah.
you?
And well, I still have a problem where sometimes I use my mouse, like the muscle memory, every once in a while, but most of the time I'm just using my keyboard. And while I wouldn't say it's faster, it's just different. It's kind of like the difference between a controller and a keyboard in a game. You know what I mean? It's
Yeah,
one's not
I
necessarily better
understand.
than the other. It's just which one you're more, used to. You know what I mean? Because like, I'm not a gamer at all. Like, not even, I'm more of a developer than I am a gamer. I'm just saying that. And we know how much of a developer I am, which is negative. But I can play with both. It doesn't bother me at all because I'm not a good gamer. I just, every once in a while I'll play. Like yesterday I subscribed to Google Stadia and tried to play it in Firefox. Did you? Like, Google Stadia doesn't play in Firefox, so I had to download Chromium for like 5 seconds.
Chrome.
Yeah. And that did not last long because at least on Arch or on Arch-based distros and on like whatever a subsystem Manjaro uses to manage preferred applications. I'm assuming it's probably like XFCE or something. I downloaded Chrome and it automatically set itself as the default browser. Like, come on, man, that's horrible. Every day that goes by, I hate Google a little bit more. And I can explain to you really quickly. I don't know if you watched this video, but I did a one of the videos I did. I said the word Google at the end of it, and the Google Home I have in my room and my phone started listening. And guess what? About 30 seconds ago, I said the word Google. My phone's sitting here listening to me, like right now. Like, it's so stupid. So yeah, I've
No,
been.
I've turned that off on the on my phone. That the OK Google. Oh, sorry, if anyone's got it on. OK G. But the problem is, I think, with the Stadia and the actual controllers, I've saw a couple of videos on how to actually turn the microphone off. And I think it consists of using a Dremel to actually get in. Uh-huh. Because I think it is on by default, much like your devices anyway. But it's a case of you want just a switch, whether it's hardware or software, just to flick it across, just to not listen. It's not that you're getting up to anything. You just don't want stuff like this being transferred across. Just on the other side of Brave, I mean, I use Brave. I was quite happy. I mean, obviously don't sign up to any of the reward system with the bloody bat thing, which is pointless. So I went on. I thought, oh, let's get into cryptocurrency and get these bat tokens. I'll get this and I'll get that. I think after about 2 weeks, I'd made about $2, and I just thought, sod that for the amount of time. Yes, I'll give it its props. It is good at blocking ads. I must admit, I've got ad blockers on Firefox and silly things like your eBay. You've always got the odd silly ad down the bottom, unless you delve a bit further and maybe get a couple more. But Brave just takes everything away. I think there's been talk sometimes that they're replacing the odd ad. Maybe I'm making that up, but from my experience, in terms of blocking ads and stuff like that, just so you can actually read a web page without having copious amounts of clutter to scroll past. Yeah, I would thumbs up to Brave till I find something else. I mean, there's that many out there, and I think a lot of people have just had enough of. I think there's a bit of an exodus from Firefox.
Yeah, I know there definitely is. What I want to know, and I'm going to do a video on this, I think, but I want to know is why there aren't more forks of Firefox. Firefox is completely open source. I mean, like, way more open source than, like, Chromium is, because Chromium still, I mean, sure, Chromium is open source, but it still relies on a whole bunch of stuff from Google. And while there is a version of Firefox or Chromium out there that's apparently ungoogled or whatever, they still had to go through and do that process. What I'm wondering is why there's not more forks of Firefox out there. I found two. I mean, I know there's Pale Moon, but Pale Moon looks like it was developed for, like, Windows 3.1. like, come on. Like, I'm not using this. The two that I've tried to try, I guess, is LibreWolf and WaterFox. And the WaterFox one, I couldn't get to build at all. I don't know if it's not being developed, or maybe it's just some weird quirk of the way Arch Linux tries to build things. I don't know. And LibreFox will not remember cookies at all. So, like, I understand that cookies are bad and evil and all this stuff, and the EU is trying to make sure that everybody knows they're being tracked and stuff. And I'm one of those people, like, I don't want to have to re-sign into Google every time I want to go to YouTube. I also don't want to re-sign into Facebook or Twitter or any of those things. I want to remember once I've signed in that I've signed in. I know that's not the most secure, fast way to do things. It's just I want that to happen because it's convenient. You know, it's not something that I use these long, complicated passwords. I don't want to have to type it in every time I go through and, you know, go to a website. Whether it's a good website or a bad website, it doesn't matter. So that was I used LibreWolf for about, I don't know, 2 hours, and I just got completely sick of it not remembering anything, because it didn't even remember, like, Zoom level. So, like, you go to, like, a place where you want to read an article, and you zoom in, and because their text or whatever is, like, 5-point, and then you navigate away, and you come back later to read another article or something, and it should remember that you've zoomed in. I mean, that's just but LibreWolf doesn't, because it doesn't want to store that data, because it's completely privacy focused, and that's probably great for, you know, one time use, but for daily use it was kind of a pain in the butt. So I'm still using Firefox.
Yeah, and me, I've been exported all my bookmarks last night and transferred them over to Brave. It's quite easy. Did that, to be fair. I think the problem with your Firefox forks is the security updates and things like that, because I mean obviously Mozilla know people are forking it and things like that. So I mean, they're going to try and throw a spanner in the works till people get their heads round getting it up and running. So I mean, this, the main thing is the security updates. I mean, it depends how you value your security, really. And I mean, if you go into other browsers and things like that, it's going to be your priority. And if you're having 1 month, 2 months out of date security settings, mm-hmm. it's not very good, really. I mean, thumbs up, Mozilla, brilliant, sync, things like that to your phone. I mean, I'm currently looking where I've got Brave. Vivaldi's quite good. I quite enjoy that. That's got a. Have you ever used Vivaldi at all?
I have used Vivaldi, and I would probably switch to Vivaldi because I like their user interface. I would switch to them if they were open source. And I know it's stupid just not to use something that's, you know, because just because it's not open source, but I just kind of want my browser to be open source, completely open source. I'll probably give it another try because I do like the way their interface, at least on the desktop, it works. Do you know if their mobile app now will sync tabs? Because last time I tried it, I couldn't sync tabs between the desktop and the mobile. And that's really one feature I need, is something where I can switch, because I always do that. It's like all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it was working perfect for me. Whether I'd cleared my remote data on my computer and it kept on my phone. So, I mean, I've got to look at it a bit deeper in that. But, I mean, interested you enjoyed Vivaldi, because, I mean, obviously you like to do things the hard way, because when I started Vivaldi, I was like, oh my God, this is so busy and there's that amount of options. I mean, at the time, my PC was relatively slow. I've updated since. So, I mean, Vivaldi is a heavy browser, let's face it.
It is.
But I mean, it's got so many features to it. I mean, I don't know about in the States, but over here, if you get your shopping delivered, you literally have to sit there and just watch your screen and wait for a slot to appear. With Vivaldi, let me just pull Vivaldi up. This is great radio, isn't it? I just want to get the proper name of it, you see. Internet Vivaldi. What is it called? So, I mean, you can pin essentially mobile tabs to the left of your screen. So you can have your main page that you're looking at, and on the left is essentially your mobile screen. So you can leave things running on there. You can stick YouTube on there while you're doing the work. Yeah, I know you can have picture in picture. I've tried it with Plex, just having it running in there. Or if you're keeping an eye on sports scores while you're working away. It's just a nice little feature. And there's untold features if you go in there. But that was a really good feature. I did like just pinning my... a web-based version of a mobile web page just on your screen, and you could just carry on and just have that to the left or right or up or down, whichever way you want it. But yeah, I did quite like Vivaldi. I did go off it, like you say, with the sync was having some issues. I mean, I like to think they've probably fixed that now, and that was possibly my user error. But yeah, I mean, I quite like Vivaldi. But yeah, give it a spin.
Yeah, I this is going to seem superficial, but I liked it because I could put the tabs on the bottom. I like customizing when I'm going to use a GUI interface, I want to be able to customize it. That's the reason why I like Firefox, because I can go through and change the whole thing because it's all controlled through CSS. Anyways, that was a nice little chat about browsers. We should definitely talk about that a little bit more. But I think we should call this a day. If you all the contact information there was at the front, but just remember to subscribe to the YouTube channel. We really do appreciate any of the support you give us there. Our podcast is available on YouTube. It's also available on Spotify and Apple iTunes and Pocket Casts, and pretty much, I mean, I think we're available on like 10 or 12 different places where you can subscribe. We are also, there's a open source podcast player. I don't remember what the name of it is, but we are in there as well. So, I also saw that we were featured on the Spotify app the other day. So, there you go.
Cool. Well, worst Linux cast ever.
Yeah. So, hey, you want to know what?
It's you upsetting the Mint users. That's what it is. They're all voting this.
Well, hey, you want to know what? All publicity is good publicity, even if it's the bad stuff. You want? It's okay.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't care if you hate me as long as you're watching my videos and listening to my podcast. That's all that matters. All right. Anyways, our next topic, just real quick, is going to be. I can never remember this to have this up. We're going to talk about firewalls and security. Do you need them? Do you want them? That's what we're going to talk about. We'll see you next week with that topic.
Excellent. See you next week, guys.